The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
No, I'm not talking about Donald Trump, at least not yet. I'm wondering whether this is Black Monday. Markets down 10% since June, 3% today. Don't know why the plunge. Do know that I'll be working until age 105. What is curious is, just as we were anticipating investors jumping out of the windows on Wall Street, when the market was down more than 1,000, the Dow down more than 1,000, heading toward that 7% figure where they stop all trading. The funny thing is, the market fought its way back. Now it's down under 500, down 488. What the hell is going on? Obviously, there's all kinds of volatility. But at least it stopped before it went too far. Maria Bartiromo from Fox Business, my colleague and friend, joins us. Maria, thank you. Can you sort this out? What the hell? Oh, not there yet. Okay. She's coming. She'll be here soon. Sorry, I misunderstood you, Crash. She's coming soon. Oil down below $40. It's $38.79. Good news is we're heading back under $2 a gallon for the gas that we fill our cars with. You think that would fuel some kind of bounce. Also, housing is fine. Housing's doing fine. The U.S. fundamentals remain strong. Unemployment continues to drop. And yet we have this kind of volatility. Is this all about China? Or has the stock market bubble burst? I mean, it was the biggest intraday drop in the history of Wall Street, the biggest drop of the Dow ever in the history of the world, in the history of the planet. I mean, some of the stocks were down so far. Marty, you got the list of popular stocks?
Well, I have some of the most widely held stocks. I mean, especially Apple, one we all look at, was down to 92 this morning. That's a 52-week low. That's probably a two-year low. It's now coming back a little. It's at 103. This is certainly a buying opportunity for some. NASDAQ, just a few minutes ago, was down to 85. It's sprung back a little bit. It's at 95 now.
What's that? What stock is that?
That's a Netflix. I'm sorry.
Netflix.
Yeah.
Say that again. What was Netflix down?
Netflix was down to $85.
And what is it now?
It's currently $96.
So somebody's buying something.
Somebody's buying it. Tesla, you know, again, one of the most talked about stocks, was down to $195. So it's down about 30 points. It's now back up to $220. So certainly there are a couple of things that are coming back. Facebook was down to $72. It's now back up to 81. So things are coming back, but it was shocking to see some of these numbers earlier this morning.
I really thought, ladies and gentlemen, thanks, Brian, I thought it was going to be a crash. It just really looked like a real panic there. But what happened is that the amateurs sold in a panic starting at 9:30, and then around 15 minutes ago, the pros started stepping in and buying all these high-priced stocks. So they believe long-term that the U.S. economy is going to be okay. But it was definitely hair-raising. I'll just tell you a quick story as we wait for Maria Bartiromo to join us. I remember 2009 when the Dow went down. I've told you to think this story before. The Dow went into the 6,000s. I was there watching it all happen. I ran out on my dock. I just took a little swim in my little pool. I got up on the dock. I got out naked. It was a full moon. I started howling at the moon. I'm not selling. I didn't. It went back to 18,000. Now it's down, humbled to 16,000, but at least it's not lower than that. Maria is on the line right now from Fox Business. Maria Bartiromo. So, hi.
Hi there, Geraldo. How are you?
Did you fasten your seatbelt at 9:30? What's going on?
Absolutely. Well, look, we're expecting an ugly opening. We got it. The market opened down more than 1,000 points. First time we've seen that in a long time. So we are seeing real nervousness for the markets. But I agree with you. I think you have to look at this market long term. You can't be panicking out. And I think at some point there will be some real opportunities to invest for the long term here.
So obviously, as we were discussing with Netflix and Tesla and Apple, a lot of the other big name stocks, people are already jumping in to buy at bargain prices. But how insulated is the U.S. economy, which seems fundamentally pretty good, from China and all the other things going on out there?
Well, look, I think the U.S. economy is obviously the best house in a tough neighborhood. I mean, when you look around the world, we've got unrest in so many different pockets of the world, and the U.S. is actually showing stability. We are also seeing an improvement in the jobs numbers month after month. But having said all of that, if the economy in the U.S. were doing so great, we would not be having this discussion and this debate about whether or not the Federal Reserve should raise interest rates. The truth is the economy should be a lot farther along at this point in the cycle than we are right now. We're more than 8 years away from the crisis. We should not be talking about a 2% growth for the U.S. economy. So, yes, I agree with you that the economy has done better and it's improving, but we're not where we should be, and certainly we're not exhibiting the kinds of confidence that would encourage businesses to hire workers. We need to get back to sustained growth and higher growth numbers like 4 or 5%, where businesses feel confident that they could actually take on workers and offer benefits. We're not there yet. So as a result, I don't know that the Federal Reserve will be able to raise rates next month. I think the Fed really needs to get out of this zero policy, but the economy is just not giving us all of that because we've got a slow grower in the U.S., and then you've got all of these shocks around the world. China's slowing down substantially. Europe's still in an uncertain phase. There's a lot of unknowns around the world, and that will impact the U.S.
I heard our colleague Charlie Gasparino about 20 minutes ago blame Obamanomics. Do you think it is Obama administration fiscal and financial policy that's at play here?
Well, I don't disagree with Charlie, I've got to tell you, because the truth is when you look back over the last 7 years, the only policies that have actually done anything for the economy or for the stock market are coming from the Federal Reserve. Now, you may push back and say, look, Maria, lower interest rates does not create jobs, and that's true. But the truth is that lower interest rates have encouraged the housing market, have encouraged people to take out mortgages, have encouraged people to buy cars and lease cars and other big ticket items. So the Federal Reserve policy has helped. Unfortunately, we've had zero fiscal policy from the Obama administration. When you look at the amount of regulation out there, that has put a crimp in people's businesses. People are unwilling to hire new workers because the cost is too high because of the benefits that they are forced to provide for full-time employees. So they're sitting on cash. The EPA came out with onerous rules, more on top of onerous rules just recently, creating more expense, more costs for business, which, again, is keeping them sitting on cash. And then, of course, so you've got the regulatory environment, and then you've got the lack of any tax reform. How long have we been talking about the fact that tax policy is so incredibly complicated and it's unfair? We should have seen tax reform 5 years ago, and we still haven't seen it. So the lack of tax reform, the lack of regulatory relief is, I believe, yes, the reason that companies are sitting on cash and consumers are sitting on cash. If you were running a business and you had all of these uncertainties and you knew your business was about to get much more expensive because of the cost of Dodd-Frank and the cost of the EPA, what are you going to do? You're not going to say, oh, let me hire a million workers. You're going to say, you know what? I'm going to just assess. I'm going to sit on cash, and I'm going to wait. And then there's the demand story. You're just not seeing the kinds of demand that you would expect at this moment in the cycle. People were expecting the prices for gasoline to really help consumers. It hasn't yet. And this is, we're going on 2 years. It has not translated into higher consumer spending.
I was on your show on Thursday when you had a very extended interview with Donald Trump, who obviously is a hugely successful business guy. And you tried to pin him down on some of the fiscal policies, economic policies, aside from saying that he would simplify the tax code and that he was pondering whether a flat tax was a good idea or not and was not very definitive about that. Are you satisfied that he's articulated a plan that would be any different or would be any more effective, any better than the Obama plan?
No, I think right now we need much more specifics and we need granular in what Donald Trump is talking about. Look, right now Donald Trump is resonating with the American people because he is saying things that people, you know, people are angry about, and he's tapping into that. I mean, when he says, look, stupid people negotiated our Iran deal, and we have a stupid deal in Iran, most people think that. They're wondering why we just did this deal with Iran and why Iran gets to have their own inspectors inspect their military sites. And when you hear him say things like, look, you know, immigrants are taking our jobs, you know, people are mad. They're upset about their jobs and the fact that their wages haven't moved. So they say, oh, yeah, that's right. So he's resonating with a portion of the public that is angry with the establishment and angry with what's happening. As far as specifics and real granular, you know, ideas on how he would change things, no, we have not gotten that yet. I hope that over the next couple of months, as we get closer to the election, we'll hear real specific plans from all of the candidates to really assess who might have the secret sauce to actually get this economy moving again.
Would you, if people were baby boomer generation, would you advise them selling their equities now? Do you do that? I don't even know if you do, you know, do you take a position, you know, kind of tactical like that?
No, I don't take a position like that. I can't. I'm a journalist. But I will say this. When you look at the market, you don't want to be a trader. You don't want to have a reaction to every headline out there. You want to look at your money over a long-term period. And when I say long-term, I mean 5, 10, 15, 20 years. You've got to ask yourself a question. What do I want to do with this money? Where do I want to, what, if I want to make money in the stock market, what do I want to do with it? Do I want to have a nest egg to buy a home? Do I want to just save this money? Do I want to pay for my daughter's wedding in 20 years? These are the kinds of questions you have to ask yourself, because then you will say to yourself, okay, then I don't need that money for 20 years. If you don't need that money for 20 years, you need to be buying stocks, okay? Because the way to create wealth over the long term is through the stock market. And that I have no question in my mind about. That is the truth. And so in that regard, then you have to say to yourself, okay, the market just dropped 1,000 points. Is it time for me to start looking for opportunities? And I would not be, you know, looking, if you really don't know what you're doing and you don't follow the market very much, I would not look for individual stocks. I wouldn't say, oh, Apple has dropped 21%, so now I'll buy Apple. You really have to assess a company's growth story and their earnings. I would do exchange-traded funds, an ETF, where you have exposure to a lot of companies, where you have exposure to the broad market, and you're not paying heavy fees. So that's the way I look at markets. I try very hard not to get panicked and, you know, see the headlines, market's down 1,000 points, I want to sell too. No, I would assess, reassess, say, here's where my portfolio is right now. Does it still make sense? Am I still looking at growth stories? Do I still believe I'm going to make money in 10, 15, 20 years? And that's the way you really look at the market. I would not be a trader in this environment at all.
And no time for panic.
No time for panic. Look, markets go up and down. They always will. But, you know, when you're buying into the U.S. stock market, you're buying into U.S. companies. So you have to make an assessment. Do I want to buy into America? Do I want to buy into American companies that are growing? And what sectors do I believe are growing? There are a number of sectors that are outpacing the broad growth in the U.S. economy. You look at something like healthcare. You know, we're going to need a million new healthcare professionals, nurses, and what have you, because we're living longer, because we're seeing incredible innovation on cancer and heart disease. There are ways not only to see that and live longer, but ways to make money on that. There, you know, technology is changing the way we live, changing what we do. You want to look for areas of growth in the market that will actually outpace this 2-2.5% grower that is the U.S. economy. And then you want to stay with it for the long term. You don't want to trade in and out of things.
Maria Bartiromo, thanks for the good advice, Maria.
Thanks so much, Geraldo. Have a good day.
I'll see you later in the week. All right, it's 20 minutes after 10 o'clock. 866, Geraldo, you heard what Maria had to say. What's your take on it? What's your opinion? What do you know? How you feeling? I mentioned Trump. He was kind of vague and mushy on his fiscal policy, but he was very specific on some of the others. He got over 30,000 people Friday night. Three cable networks carried his campaign event live as if it was a coronation. I said on Friday I thought that he was unstoppable as the Republican nominee. Do you agree with me? Does this volatility on Wall Street help or hurt the businessman?
The bottom line, unfortunately, to some of you, I love this story because of, so when I get the call, I say, no, 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 you're going to build in the United States. They're going to say, no, we don't want to do that. I say, let me tell you, sir, you're going to build in the United States. And I will be called by people, but I will not have any of their money, so I don't care. And they're going to say, and I'll call them in, and I'll say, listen, here's the story. You're building $2.5 billion in Mexico. We're going to charge you a tremendous little 35% tax. Okay? And I'll say the same thing to Nabisco. It doesn't help us. It doesn't help us. When you look at what's going on, when you look at what's going on, where Nabisco's closing and so many places are closing, when you look at the kind of money that these countries are making, and I'm naming a few, I mean so many countries, we don't have anything left. We're running on fumes. We're running on fumes.
And it's Trump with his protectionist policy, wants to charge tariff on goods. Usually, Republicans are anti-tariff. He wants to charge tariffs if companies close a U.S. manufacturing facility and move it. He's talking about Nabisco moving to Mexico. Trump says, no, if you want to do business with the United States, in the United States, you're about to be in the United States. So I'm not sure how that's going to fly. I know that we'll sound good to the electorate. I'm not sure how economists will view it. I'm neutral. I don't know enough about it to really give you my opinion. But it is interesting. And will this volatility help or hurt Trump? The Dow now down 390. It was down less than 300. But now it's back. The losses are deepening again, but nowhere near what it was when it opened, when we dropped more than 1,000 points on the Dow. I thought we'd have bodies flying out of the buildings on Wall Street. That was averted. People seeing buying opportunities going in, buying things like Netflix and Apple and Tesla that had dropped dramatically in the very early trading. Now they're coming back up to the prices they had on Friday. Vince in New Jersey, what do you think? Who does it help?
Yeah, good morning. I two parts to this whole thing. I want to comment on what Maria said and also about your Trump question.
Sure.
Obviously, it has to help Trump. And even if it's just perception, I don't agree with Trump on some of these financial policies, oddly enough, but most of the people will, because it's just the perception that he's a billionaire and he's going to make all of us wealthy again. And the one policy that I totally disagree with, I don't like what he's saying about taxes. I mean, he is wishy-washy on taxes, and he has to come
very
out
wishy-washy.
And say,
he doesn't seem to have picked a lane yet.
Well, yeah. Well, he says a fair tax might be good, but you know, he wants a graduated tax. He doesn't know if he wants a good. That's not good. But the other problem I don't like is I don't like the fact that he says he's going to tax these companies that move to. Why doesn't he say, I'm going to make these companies want to do business in America? I'm going to make it a place where companies want to come to America.
I like the sound of that, Vince. I got to go for the news, but call back.
What goes up must come down. Spinning wheel, got to go.
The spinning wheel is spinning on Wall Street. Donald Trump, after the market opened so dramatically down over 1,000, tweeted out this morning, as I have long stated, we are so tied in with China and Asia that their markets are now taking the U.S. market down. Get smart, USA. All right, basically saying that our fortunes are too closely tied to the rest of the world, and that the declines in the U.S. stock market is and should not be so intimately tied into China and Asia. And Trump warns that this could get messy. It's not as messy as it was at 9:30 when we were down almost 1,100 points. Now we're down 418. For a time, it looked like the market was fighting its way back even more dramatically. But it's very difficult to call it on a minute-by-minute basis as the traders surge in and out. 866 Geraldo, what are you thinking about today? Politics, business, Mario, what's up, man?
Hi, Geraldo. How are you? Geraldo, I just want to point something out to you. I'm in the corrugated box business, and I'm also in the recycling business. My orders for recycled corrugated boxes, which the Chinese have been buying for the last 10 years, they turn it into paper products, paper towels, toilet paper, paper plates, stuff like that. I haven't been able to ship an order in 1 month. On top of that, they took my price from 120 down to 85. That's one side of the coin. The other side of the coin is, we used to sell manufacturers all over this great country, especially in the Northeast. At one time, New Jersey was the central point for the printing and graphic arts industry in the United States. Geraldo, it's all gone. All of the auto books, when you go to a dealership to buy a car, they hand you that catalog. That all used to be printed in New Jersey, Geraldo. It's all done in China. We make nothing here. Geraldo, trust me when I tell you this, my brother. We have to manufacture here. Trump is exactly right. And let me tell you where he's exactly on one side or the other. Follow the money, my friend. He just called for taxing the rich. The hedge fund guys, if you saw their deal, the way they pay the tax to the IRS, the first $1 million they make, they pay at a normal rate. Everything after that is paid at capital gains, 15%. What's the matter with us? Why can't we get the same break?
Yeah, I want that. I want to pay 15%.
Let me just say another thing. Now, Bernie Sanders is calling for the same identical thing. He's not talking about taxing the rich. The hedge fund guys and the people that make the movies in Hollywood, they have that niche. We don't have it. And Geraldo, I swear to God, based on our relationship, Central Park, the football, my brother, if we don't start manufacturing here, we are doomed.
All right, what about this, Mario? What about this? Trump says tariffs. What about what Maria Bartiromo said? Instead of tariffs, make the USA more attractive to produce. Well, how do you do that? How do you make it more attractive without tariffs?
I'm going to answer that question for you right now. Maria Bartiromo is right. I have a plant over here in Jersey. We do recycle. I put a baler in 5 years ago. It's not some extravagant machine, if you would think. It's a baler. I have 9 stickers on there from permits, environmental this guy, work safety this guy, work safety. Every one of those stickers cost me $450. She's exactly right. We're so overregulated, it's ridiculous, that when I place an order for a truckload of toilet paper, Geraldo, you hear what I'm telling you? Toilet paper. We give it to Kimberly Clark. They send it out to Indonesia to get paid. Come on. Come on, Geraldo. Come on.
Okay, Mario. Well done. You can be my Minister of Economics. Thank you, brother. In Florida, Sham's on the line. What's up, Sham?
Hello.
Hi, you're on. What's up?
You know, Geraldo. Hello?
Yes, we're listening.
Well, I know you're a good friend of Mr. Trump, which
yes.
is wonderful. Just to let you know, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, but I'm a proud American. Now, every time Mr. Trump in an interview, he always saying, if I will not be treated with respect. But he never really defined what respect means. What does he want? I mean, what does he want? How does he want to be treated with respect? What does that mean?
And that's an excellent question. I don't know the answer to that. I can just start as you ask the question to surmise that what he means is that they don't insult him, that he is treated, given equal opportunity, equal access.
But
I don't know. I hope he doesn't mean that they have to roll over and play dead when he. When he stomps on them, I hope he doesn't mean that. I don't know what he means.
But Geraldo, why the media? I mean, he always complained about the media. Nevertheless, if you ask him something that he have an answer, I mean, he lashes all over you. He just wants you to give him a soft ball. And anytime you ask him something that's rough and tough around the edges, he lashes at you, and he doesn't want to answer.
Well, I can't say that I disagree. There is definitely a very thin skin sometimes when it comes to Trump, who is one of the most hard-nosed businessmen around. Imawa, here's Sam. What's up, Sam? Hello, Sam, you there? All right, Sam, snooze, you lose. Here, Phil. What's up, Phil?
Yeah, I'm calling about, you know, Hillary Clinton's campaign, because I see that the Obama crowd are out to get her, really. And what she should do for herself and the country, she should tell the story that Obama told her to lie about Benghazi that very evening in a phone call and ordered her to issue a lying statement about what had happened. And reluctantly, this is Ned Klein's book, Blood Feud, that she went along with it. And if she would have come out with the truth that he lied like that, he could be impeached, and this could stop his provocation. You know, he's actually provoking a war with Russia by what they're doing in the Ukraine right now. I'm a Jewish person, by the way. They're promoting the resurgence of Nazis, neo-Nazis in the Ukrainian government, and these guys are out to start a war with Russia and get us into a nuclear war with Russia. I mean, Hillary could put a stop to that by coming out and exposing Obama for what he is.
Okay, Phil, I have to say that I don't think that Ed Klein is necessarily an honest broker when it comes to reporting on highly charged political allegations like you have just described. Here's Soma in Ridgewood. Hi, Soma. How are you, honey? What up?
Hi, Geraldo. Listen, I don't like Trump's delivery. However, he says and speaks my language, because I've been saying it forever. So we have to forget about the way he's brashed and he's, you know, so what? He's saying things that sound right, that we know in our heart is right. And another thing is, we have to remember that he's taking a hit like everybody. He's a millionaire, but he's taking it with a grain of salt, and he knows what he has to do for millionaires and for people that work for millionaires. After all, millionaires provide us jobs. We keep forgetting that as a public. We're so many of us are so entrenched against people who make money. Give me a break. You make money, Geraldo. Do I hate you? No. I'm glad a Hispanic man is doing something good and coming up, you know, has come up. So, yeah, that's what I say. We have to stop hating him for saying what he said. He said he's going to hit them with tariffs. Right after that, everything went crazy. Every jerk that wants to destroy him, because they're in bed with the other politicians, with the companies and whatnot in other countries. We have to stop that. We have to protect ourselves once and for all.
Thanks for the call, sweetheart. I really appreciate it. Soma, thanks a lot. All right, so let me just give you the summary here at 46 minutes after 10 o'clock. The stock market got whacked at 9:30 today when it opened, dropping over 1,000 points. We all thought that the bottom had totally fallen out. Losses now less than half that. Dow remaining firmly above 16,000, at least right now. In China, they got really beaten up yesterday for them, last night for us. Their benchmark composite indexes all erasing whatever gains they had for the year. Markets also off in Europe. Oil down lowest point in more than 6 years. It is a rough and tumble day on Wall Street. It's a place where, to the ordinary person, to you and me, it's really a question of 401ks, really a question of whether or not the nest egg is still there. Whether or not all that money invested in equities now, what do you do with it? I say do nothing. I mean, that's just me, but I would say just do nothing. I'll get back to the financial news as the market continues its tipsy-turvy motion. I just want to give you, there's so much else I wanted to talk about today. Just one thing off the top. You know, Ashley Madison, the cheaters website, they are now offering a $500,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of the group that hacked their site. The reason I bring it up is the Toronto police have just tweeted out that they have two so far unconfirmed but probable reports of suicides. Men who have committed suicide after their names showed up on the website. And we've just begun to see some of the people there. Josh Duggar, you know, the guy from 19 Kids and Counting. And then the guy who prosecuted unsuccessfully Casey Anthony in Florida, Jeff, I forget his last name. He's on the list. He's on the list too. Jeff Ashton, that's his name. Jeff Ashton, the prosecutor of Casey Anthony, the man who failed to prosecute the woman widely thought to have killed and then ditched her baby's body. She was acquitted. Jose Baez defended her brilliantly, but she was acquitted anyway. Jeff Ashton, the holier-than-thou prosecutor in that case, among the Ashley Madison consumers or customers. Let me just do Barry before ran out of time here. Thanks for your patience, Barry. What's on your mind?
Hi, Geraldo. A couple of things. First of all, Maria Bartiromo. She's the female Jim Cramer, okay? None of these guys on CNBC or Fox Business really have a clue as to what's going on. It's all guesswork. So for anybody to listen to them, it's just ridiculous. It's opinion, and we must not
forget. But isn't it learned opinion?
I'll give you a for instance. She said, well, Obama should have done more. We're 8 years removed from the crisis. Well, tell that to the middle class who are not working. We don't make anything. The guy from Jersey before was 100% right. We don't make anything. So we don't make anything. We don't have workers in the middle class. That affects retail. If you'll notice, you shop at Neiman's or Nordstrom's or Saks. Use any of those stores?
Do I? I don't shop, but my wife does.
Okay. If you'll take a look at what they're doing, and this is now includes Macy's and Bloomingdale's, they're all opening off-price stores because the top tier is getting murdered. There's no more aspirational. You're down to discount. America wants discount because America has no money in the middle and the shopping classes. So what they're saying is totally ridiculous. They don't have a clue as to where the economy is going unless we make something.
There is definitely huge spread in terms of those discount stores everywhere you drive nowadays.
Hey, TJ Maxx, Ross, all of those stores are doing unbelievably.
BJ's.
Right. Now, as far as Trump is concerned, Trump is 100% right. The problem is the issues are very complex, as you well know. You can't put a president in office the same way we did with, say, Obama, and tell him, okay, pull all the levers and don't worry, everybody's with you. Because that doesn't happen. The Tea Party and the conservatives in this country have put a gridlock in there that we can't do a thing. Trump is going to be dealt with the same thing. He's on both sides of the issues. I believe he's right on most of them, but to get it done is a totally other thing.
Would you vote for him?
I'm sorry?
Would you vote for him?
At this point, no.
All right, gotta go on that note. We'll be back.
CNN does this big report that came out last week, so I was leading in the polls. There was a poll, and everybody says, why don't I have a pollster? What the hell do I need a pollster? Every day I wake up, there's another poll, right? You know, they pay these guys like $100,000 a month. And they can't function because unless they go and have it vetted with their pollster, they can't talk. And I say, why do I need a pollster when every day there's a new poll and they give like 30 pages? I don't have to get a pollster. What the hell do I need it? Save your money. Okay.
It was amazing to see all three cable news networks carrying his campaign event in Mobile, Alabama, live Friday night. They extended many of the Friday night broadcasts. I know my daughter Isabella works on Fox Business. They had a two-hour special they did Friday night. Everybody did it. Trump, you know, I drove my boat to Martha's Vineyard from New York. I stopped at City Island. I want to thank Vinny and the guys at City Island. They really did a very nice job. I asked for a bag of ice. They brought out three bags of ice and a case of Corona. It was just wonderful hospitality. City Island, drove to Martha's Vineyard, where, of course, President Obama was wrapping up his vacation. So he flew out yesterday morning. Today, he is or has met with Vice President Joe Biden. And the reason I bring it up is now the talk of Joe Biden running, Vice President Biden jumping into the 2016 race, is more heated than ever. Vice President Biden reportedly hired this woman, Kate Bedingfield. She worked in other big campaigns, so the speculation is that that Joe Biden may be thinking more fervently than ever that he is going to jump into the race. I think that it is a mistake, but it is a function of the fact that Hillary Clinton is doing so badly. I mean, she just, almost through no fault of her own, it's just that she just is a bad campaigner. When you hear her speak, it doesn't inspire you particularly. It's not like when Obama ran where you dreamed of an idealistic future. In Hillary Clinton's case, it's kind of you hold your nose and, you know, here we go again down this road. You know, so she's definitely not generating anything like the energy of the Trump campaign. And I'm speaking, my old pal Leo Kaiser, my lawyer for 40 years, a real Republican from the South. He now has come around to accepting Trump as the Republican nominee. I mean, I don't know if that's going to happen. But also, just tangentially on politics, before I get back to this finance, and Charlie Gasparino from Fox Business will be on the line momentarily. Coming to work today, you know, St. Francis of Assisi, the wonderful church, charitable church, you know, and this is where Pope Francis gets his name. You know, they serve the poor. I think that the line outside St. Francis of Assisi Church for the free breakfast is almost like a barometer of how well we're doing. This morning, the line stretched from the church, which is on 31st Street between 6th and 7th, stretched all the way to 7th Avenue, then all the way to 32nd Street. I mean, it's a huge line, hundreds and hundreds of hungry, mostly homeless people lining up outside of St. Francis of Assisi on West 31st Street this morning to get that free breakfast. Now, a block away from the church is where our office is, here high above Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena. And, you know, 33rd Street is now closed between 7th and 8th for a pedestrian mall. So who do you think is using that pedestrian mall? It's the vagrants and the homeless. They get the breakfast from the church. They bring it to the pedestrian mall to eat it. I mean, this is a very melancholy scene. I mean, I don't care how hardened you are as a native New Yorker or whatever, but you go there and you see all these homeless people eating their breakfast. There's kind of like the stickiness on the pavement from all the gop and the goop and the piss and everything that's been going on over the weekend. And then there's this brand new pedestrian mall and all the homeless people there. You know, it's reminiscent of the Depression era in Central Park where they had Hoover Town and all that. I mean, the homeless need services. And what is the city obsessed about? Really, what is the city obsessing about? We're obsessing about bare breasts in Times Square. And they want to close the pedestrian mall in Times Square, not because it's unsuccessful, but because it's attracting so many people that you get a lot of hustlers, including the bare-breasted, the desnudas, who just have their tits painted and they pose with tourists, etc. I mean, come on, are bare breasts really the problem when you have all of the hundreds and hundreds of homeless just a few blocks away? I submit to you that instead of being obsessed about Times Square and the bare breasts, Mayor de Blasio should be obsessed about all of these vagrants and homeless and everything else that they're, you know, living out their lives right in public there. I mean, it is really at a level I haven't seen it since the bad old days, since the 70s. It's disgusting. Very depressing. Very melancholy. I'm not putting down the vagrants and the homeless and the rest. But there's got to be a better way for the city to handle it. What's that, Crash? All right, play the buzzer. Play around.
Clearly, a lot of people are very uncomfortable with it, and I understand why, and I agree. On a common sense level, this is not appropriate in the middle of a public square. I respect constitutional rights, and therefore, what we need is a new element in the equation, which this task force, including the law department, will develop.
I don't like the situation in Times Square, and we're going to address it in a very aggressive manner.
I mean, come on. Times Square? This is exactly what's wrong with American politics. Here they are. Why are they obsessing over breasts in Times Square? Because that they could look like they're doing something about, we're going to crack down on these breasts in Times Square. They brought in the New York State troopers to enforce the law. This is a crisis. That's on 42nd Street is the crisis, 43rd, 44th Street. Come down 10 blocks, half a mile, and you have hundreds of homeless people pissing on the street, sleeping on the pretty pedestrian mall they've created outside of Madison Square Garden. This is exactly what's wrong with politics in America today. These cheesy politicians go for the short money. They react to something so benign. I'm the father of five. I have three daughters. Bare breasts are not the problem. Vagrancy, homelessness, hunger. That's the problem. Want to tackle a problem? Tackle a real problem. Stop with the messing around about something that means nothing. One other point, and I'm going to get back, I promise, to your calls. Dan, David, Paul, hang in there. Your calls on about this very important Dow down now, again, down 440. It's been all over the place, but at least we've halved the losses. But the other thing I want to mention is this this news out of France, Belgium, that high-speed train to Paris and the three California buddies on holiday. You know, two of them service members, the other one a student. They all get together, these guys, they've known each other forever, their whole lives. They're on the train along with another American whose name I don't have right in front of me. I'll get to it. But Spencer Stone, Alex Skalatos, Anthony Sadler. I love they did like a real cross-section of America. And the Anglo guy, the kind of the Greek guy, the black guy, all together friends forever. And they subdue this would-be jihadist bent on mass murder. As the French train staff, they tremble, they flee, leaving the passengers defenseless. The three Americans step up to the plate. I mean, I had tears coming down my eye. I have tears coming down my eye describing it to you right now. The French tremble, they flee. Passengers defenseless. Three men stand up. Not a weapon between them. What do? They attack the attacker. And earlier today in Paris, they got the French Legion of Honor, the highest decoration for courage and heroism that the French government can bestow. And there's a lesson there. A lesson for all of us. Never surrender. Never surrender. Confront the tyrants, confront the bullies, confront the criminals, confront the murderers. They will show you no mercy. Fearful inaction will only embolden the bad, the crazy, and the cruel. It's better to die with your boots on. One of the guys, actually, Anthony Sadler, who's the college student among the three, the one non-service member, he said during this ceremony, in times of crisis, do something. Do something. Never take it lying down. Never. Never put your hands up. Never surrender. Better to fight them. Better to fight them. It only emboldens the crazies, the cruel, the bad. Fight them like these three brave Americans, four brave Americans, and one French actor. But imagine if they weren't there. You know what the story would be today, despite the market crash? It would be that 10, 20, 30 were massacred on the high-speed train. But instead, what you have is jihadists now from Morocco on all the terror watch lists in custody. Three Americans getting the Legion of Honor. If the stock market crashing, well, it's a half crash. It was a full crash at 9:30. Now it's we paired the losses, although it's ticked up a couple of hundred points since the, it recovered into the, 300, then it was under 300 down. Now it's like 450 again. And it's what's interesting is you got the stock market crashing, but politicians lag reality. So today you have Jeb Bush heading to the U.S.-Mexico border. I'm sure he thought that that would be like all the news. I mean, a day late and a dollar short, but Jeb Bush is going to the U.S.-Mexico border today. Obviously, he's trying to frame his trip as the contrast to Trump's trip. He's trying to highlight the differences between his plan and Trump's plan. Going to the border today is Jeb Bush. I wonder if that highly charged emotional issue will still resonate as loudly and as profoundly today as it might have on a day when so much money was not being lost. I don't know. What are you thinking? All right, let me see. Buddy Hale in Freeport. I haven't spoken to you for a while. What's up, Hale?
How was your weekend boating?
It was good. The water was flat, a little rain, but no problem.
All right. I have an idea. Home Depot should donate those little, tool sheds, the plastic tool sheds, and we put them all over the city so that the homeless people can live in them. Once a week, the city goes in there and power washes them and cleans them. You give them a little porta potty, okay? If you want to drop food off, you have a little drawer to drop food or give money to them. This way, they're not panhandling. And every 10th one, you put a police officer in one that makes believe he's homeless, and you make it bulletproof so he doesn't get shot. And now you got eyes and ears. These people want to be homeless. They enjoy it. And with the second subject, with these military people,
I don't think the homeless necessarily enjoy it. I think a lot of them have mental issues. They're emotionally disturbed in many ways. I can't imagine that they enjoy it, quote unquote.
They don't like to be cooped up. They like to be in fresh air.
Yeah, well, they could be fresh air in the country someplace, not on 31st Street.
All right, let's talk about the military people. I think any military, police, fire should ride on the trains in America or anywhere in the world for free. Okay? If a cop gets on a plane, put him in first class. If a fireman gets on a plane, put him in first class. Okay? Because these are the people that are first ones to roll up their sleeve and tackle somebody.
I have no problem with that one, but I appreciate it. I like thinking. I like, even if the idea falls flat, I like that people are coming up with ideas. But I tell you one thing about first responders and, you know, people in uniform, the uniform of the military of the United States, I love them, and I love men and women when they have that kind of elan, that spirit, that courage. We need courage in this world. You know, you can't be afraid. You can't go through life afraid. You know, you've got to have some percentage of the population that says, I'm going to take care of my fellow man and woman, and boy and girl. I go through life, sometimes on my bicycle riding around, I'm like a frigate looking to sort things out if I have to. You got to have that attitude. And I have it now still as a geriatric. James in Long Island, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Araldo?
Okay.
You know, you were talking about the homeless people and standing in line waiting for breakfast, right? Now, if you take Obama's math and add 51 states, that's the real catastrophe. I mean, it's a shame that this country is going through that. And as far as the French are concerned, didn't they invent the surrender?
They have not comported themselves with great decorum in their various conflicts. They have not. I'm reading a new book, All the Words You Cannot Hear. I think that's the name of it. It's great, great. Actually, Eric and I are reading it together. James, thank you. Dan in New Jersey, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Arango. Good morning. I have a question. Can you explain to me the logic that says when enough people in one country don't like the law of the other country, they should break it, and the other country should change their laws? Because that's what's going on with immigration, my friend.
Do you think that's what it is? You think it's that kind of conscious, big picture? It's not someone who just wants a better life for themselves and their children?
No, I have no problem with the people coming across the border. They want a better life for their children. God bless them. I see a lot, and they're all hardworking people. It's a liberal mindset.
You don't see any of them online at St. Francis of Assisi, I'll tell you that much.
Well, they're not on that line. They're working. I know that. But here's my question, though. We have somewhere between 11 and 30 million people in this country. They're not being rounded up and sent home. And I hear people who think like yourself, and it's never enough. Whatever we're doing is never enough.
No, I got that. I understand that. I totally. And you need to secure borders. You need to know who's in your country. You need an inventory of who's here. I totally get that. I just think you need a solution that's a lot less draconian than taking the horrifying emotional scene with Elian Gonzalez and multiplying it by 5 or 10 million kids. I mean, it just doesn't work. Pet Shop Boys, opportunity, let's make lots of money. I know you take it would take a lot of courage to just jump in, start buying stocks willy-nilly, although many of the big-name stocks were down a lot more at 9:30 than they are now. Apple way down, Netflix way down, Tesla way down, and then they came right back. Well, mostly came back. What do you do? We're going to hear more from my colleagues, Liz Claman at Fox Business. Oh, Liz is there. Hey, Lizzie, how you doing? Hello, Liz?
Yeah, right here.
Hi, it's Rallo.
Hey, hi, honey.
Good to see you.
Good to see you.
My neighbor, my dear friend. So, you know, what's going on here?
Okay, we're having a market washout. At least we did at the start of the market. Rallo, I was sitting at my desk. I had rushed in because we knew that this was going to be a very ugly day. Why? Because China tanked overnight, fell 8.5%, their stock market. This is all sparked by China, by the way, in case anybody's wondering, what happened to my Apple stock? A lot of this is China growth slowing down. We knew it would be a tough day. The market opened. Boom. Dow Jones Industrials fell 1,089 points. That's a significant point drop. Had we closed there, it would be the worst that we've ever seen, at least as point drops are concerned. Percentages are different. So it's not that big of a deal when you look at the percentage points. But suddenly, the markets came back up off the floor. So let me tell you, at this very moment, the Dow Jones Industrials are down 385 points. So we basically wiped away 700 points of losses, which is a good sign, certainly, at least to some.
And what is it a sign of that, yeah, that emotion was dictating the big drop? I mean, was it all the amateurs that lost their money when the market opened and now it's the pros coming in? What's happening?
Well, the amateurs in China blew everything. They jumped into the markets in China over this past year because it got very frothy. You saw gains of 60%, 6-0. And a lot of amateurs went in. Not only did they invest their money, they borrowed money to invest. So they borrowed on what's called margin. Suddenly, when the market takes a downturn, the people from whom they borrowed call up and say, I need my money back. That's called a margin call. And guess what? You can't sell the stock to give back the money because the stock is much lower at that point. So the Chinese government intervened. For us, indeed, it is just overall fear. But why people are worried, they really have to look deeply into themselves and say, wait, my losses right now are only on paper. They are only losses if I sell right now. People would argue, don't sell right now because...
Oh, I would definitely argue that.
Yeah, do not sell right now because... Guess what, folks? We have had 19 corrections in the S&P like this. Correction is a drop-off of 10% from the recent highs, 19 since World War II, and we'll see another 19 more in our lifetime.
So when oil is down almost $2, isn't that good news in terms of gas at the pump? Why does that reflect negatively on the economy?
That is terrific for the consumer, but, Geraldo, it's not great for the oil companies, many of which make up the S&P 500, which is the best sort of gauge of how stocks are doing. And what do you have there? Then you have a lot of stocks that are pulling back, and it is very disconcerting, and it pulls the whole index down. Now, you're getting a much cheaper price at the pump, thankfully, and that helps the consumer, puts more money in the consumer's pocket. But people aren't turning around and taking those savings and spending it on, you know, GoPros. What they're doing is they're either paying off debt, which is actually a good thing, or they're saving it.
And so when Trump says he's going after the hedge fund guys, is that a good thing? I mean, is that a real... By that, I mean, obviously, it gets some money to the Treasury. But is it a big deal or not, Liz? Liz Clayman is my guest.
I'll tell you where I look at these things. With certain hedge funds and certain private equity companies, those people who are worth hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars pay a much lower tax rate because of the way their income is structured. It's more structured as capital gains. Like when you sell a stock, you pay fewer taxes on it than if you were to just...
Earn a salary.
Exactly, earn a salary. So these guys have been held to a much different and easier standard. Every time you bring up this carried interest, that's what it's called, that they should be paying, look, Geraldo, if you're paying 40% and I'm paying 40% of my income in taxes.
I wish I was only paying 40.
Well, yeah, 50. Why aren't they? They're paying 20% and they're a lot wealthier than you and I.
Yeah, I don't get it. But I mean, my point is if you get these hedge fund guys to pay their fair share, how much money are you talking about?
Okay, I mean, if one more person tells me it's a rounding error, I don't care. It's billions, but not $100 billion in taxes. It is several billion, maybe tens and tens of billion. But guess what? It'll make people like you and I feel better. Meaning?
Oh, it'll make me feel better for sure.
Well, because they're being held to the same standards you, Geraldo Rivera, and I, Liz Clayman, are being held to.
Now, politically, I heard some of the commentators on Fox Business blaming Obamanomics. I mean, how does Obama bear the responsibility for this?
I would say with President Obama, it might have been too much regulation. That makes it more difficult for businesses to start businesses.
You mean like pollution stuff?
Everything from the EPA to financial regulations. I don't really have a problem regulating the big banks. They're the ones who got us into trouble in the first place. However, when you're regulating hairdressers and manicurists and, you know, Warby Parker or people who are trying to start businesses, it becomes so onerous that you can't even run your business. And I think we need to cut down on regulation that hurts small business owners. I really do. I think that would be market improvement. Also, a lot of bigger companies like Apple, they have overseas profits that they will not bring back because they'll be double taxed on it. They don't want to do that, so they leave it parked overseas, whereas if they brought it back here, they could hire more people, they could invest in the companies here if they were. There's no requirement that they do that. But guess what, Geraldo? People have been asking for something called, a basic amnesty for overseas profits. Give people 2 months or 4 months, Pfizer, Apple, whoever has money parked overseas, bring it back. You won't be taxed. Please invest it here in the U.S.
Short answer to this one. Which candidate on the Republican side is best suited to deal with the economy?
Well, isn't it stunning that nobody has really asked these guys that much? They're talking about abortion and they're talking about
immigration.
They're talking about the flags and things, you know, things that to me and to Americans, really dumb. What we really need to be talking about is the economy. How are we building more bridges and improving the highway structure and putting people to work and dropping regulations, at least bringing them down to a fair point? And we don't really know. From what I have heard, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, is pretty darn rational. He also is the only guy there who really worked on a federal budget. I think he's pretty rational about it. There's an inclination for people to say, well, Trump is a successful businessman. He would understand it. You could argue that, too. However, the way he speaks indicates he doesn't have a great sense of how the government works. He says, we're going to shut this down. We're going to bring jobs back from China. You got to work with Congress, Senate, the House. You've got to negotiate. You don't just walk in there and unilaterally start screaming at people. So I don't know if, you know, we haven't heard enough depth of how these people really do plan to fix the economy.
Liz Claman, thank you so much, my darling.
Anytime, my darling.
Okay. China crash dragged Wall Street down with it. Wall Street, though, on the verge of what seemed the precipice, clawed its way back from a loss of almost 1,100 on the Dow. Now the loss around 318. So from almost a 7% loss, we're down to a 2% loss. I mean, not great, but it's certainly not the end of the world. I'll read you a couple of emails I got. I like to reward the people who take the time to write in. Geraldo at WABCRadio.com. Hudson Wells, this is on Friday, wrote, from yesterday, a disaster, to today, one of your best ever shows. No matter what it may be, don't pick a topic and be hell-bent that you are correct about it. Don't play the attorney if your caller is dead wrong. Usually the next caller will stand up for you. Just like the caller earlier this week called you a racist, you had two callers follow up and praise you. You get a lot of hurt, but as you know, we all love you. Thank you, Hudson Wells. Appreciate that. Richard McDowell, Geraldo, when you go on the air tomorrow, please discuss the death of a 9-year-old black girl who, while home studying, was struck by a bullet, fatally injured by it. Make sure you demand that Obama, Sharpton, and Loretta Lynch, the attorney general, get to Ferguson, Missouri, where this loss of a black life, no doubt at the hands of the criminal gun-toting element, took place there, and look into the violence there. Respectfully submitted, Richard McDowell. Let's see, Joan Apple Pie. I don't know, although the address is Leo92MLS. Nothing is ever mentioned by you and others about the many diseases that illegal aliens may be bringing to the USA: leprosy, hepatitis, Chagas disease, TB, etc. These illegals work in restaurants, are gardeners, and maybe on a bus, train, or movie theater. And if the infected person sneezes or coughs, those around him may become infected. All immigrants must be required to be health checked before entering USA, and so forth. This from Leo92MLS. That's they used to say that about the Irish in the mid-19th century, how they were bringing all these dreadful diseases in from the homeland. In the Bronx, David, are you there?
Yeah, I'm
what's
here.
On your mind, buddy?
Yeah, three quick points. I think you're basically right on the Times Square issue. I mean, boobs, come on, please.
Who cares? Absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, I was discussing with some of my friends in the Bodega area. They were saying that Donald Trump said something negative about Puerto Rico or Puerto Ricans. Did you hear anything about that?
I have not, no. I mean, I don't, and I have not heard a word. I can certainly see what he could say about the fiscal crisis in Puerto Rico and these bonds being defaulted on and going belly up and what's going to happen. I have not heard that, but I'll be listening.
Oh, okay. All right, listen, something about Ashley Madison. This is an organization that helps and promotes people commit adultery. I mean, this is crazy. I mean, and it's not great for families. And they're mad that the adulterers were exposed. I mean, that's kind of stupid. I mean, you're helping destroy families.
Yeah, I agree with that, but they're offering a $500,000. Thank you for the call, David. They're offering a $500,000 reward for the identity of the hackers. Let me take Eric in City Island. What's up? I love City Island. I just had a good time there. Thank you, Vinny, again. What's up, Eric? You there?
I wish I still lived there. Geraldo, before I ask my question, I just want to thank you. My aunt was a resident of Letchworth Village.
Willowbrook type place up in Rockland County, now closed like all of them. But what's your point?
You changed institutionalized life for so many people. You really deserve thanks.
Best thing in my life.
My question was, what do you think of Trump's use of the term anchor babies in the last couple of
years? That's a good question. Trumpite. Yeah, Crash. Thanks for the caller. You got it? You got that, Trumpite? All right. Trump on illegal something or other. Here's Trump on George Stephanopoulos.
You have so many illegals. We don't even know how many illegals. I hear 11 million. I hear 30 million. The government has no idea. We have lost control of our country. We've lost control of our borders. The government has no idea how many illegals there are. I've been hearing 11 million for 5 years. Then the other day I heard 30. Nobody has any idea.
So if there's no idea, how are you going to round them all up? Where are you going to get the money? Where are you going to get the forces? Exactly how are you going to do it? What are the specifics here?
It's called management.
You keep declaring how you're going to do it, but you don't say how.
Excuse me, George?
You declare how you're going to do it, but you don't say how.
George, I'm telling you, it's called management.
I understand that you think it's a huge problem, but I still don't hear specifics on how you're going to do this. Are you for example?
You'll see my specifics, George.
All right, that's the problem with what he has to say. I mean, you're not going to round up all those people. But in terms of Eric's question about anchor babies, I don't get very excited about it. I don't think it's a big deal. It does describe a process by which a citizen child, can help a family, although it's certainly no slam dunk and they've got to go through all kinds of hoops. It is helpful to them in their quest for legitimacy. So I guess anchor baby's okay. I mean, I would not use it. The term that really offends me, as I said on The Five, I'll be on The Five again this afternoon on Fox News, so catch that. As I said on The Five on Friday, the term that really bugs me is illegal alien. Illegal alien. You know, it is technically correct, but so isn't Negro is technically correct. You don't use that anymore. There's a million other things that date back to the 1940s and 50s that were and still remain technically correct that are not used anymore. Colored, we don't use those. I mean, they're stupid terms to the extent that they show a pejorative view toward a certain group. That's why the terms are not used anymore. Illegal alien, they might as well be from where? Mars? Pluto? Well, that's not a planet anymore. Illegal alien is a term that if you hear it uttered, you know where that person stands on the issue before they even get to the substance of their argument. Reject it. Anchor babies, I'm not that excited about. I mean, I don't love it, but then again, I don't think he has to ban it. See you tomorrow. I love you.